When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome into this very special edition to UAP Weekly. I am Stephen Diener, back with you here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast Weekly Edition. And it's actually been more than a week since I've done one of these, but you know, I've been going back and forth with the new episodes, and now there really is something huge to cover here this week, which is why I wanted to jump on kind of an impromptu episode today to discuss the revelation of the brand new whistleblower, Jason Sands, the man who shook the UAP world to its very foundation over the weekend and has had everybody clamoring since late Saturday night. Boy, what a wild 48 hours it has been, and I'm going to break literally everything down here today from Jason Sands' claims that he made over the weekend on the Twitter space that he joined, because that's how all of this went down on Saturday night, a five-hour Twitter space, by the way. And admittedly, I will say this in the interest of full disclosure, because we're all about disclosure here on UAP, I was not able to listen to all 5 hours, but I heard a great portion of it, and I was able to grab a lot of the clips here that I think really tell a great story from where Jason is coming from, and his own revelations that he's trying to get out, and the fact of why he's coming out now. So there's a lot to cover from this. I'm going to break it all down for you here in one nice, neat package. But give a little backstory here of how this all came about and how we got to this moment in time today where it seems like, you know, we've had another major paradigm shift in the disclosure conversation concerning the UAP topic. So just to kind of start at the beginning, let's go back to the end of 2023, and this kind of lends into January 4th, where I tweeted out a tweet that got a lot of attention, negative and positive, and I'll get to that in a second, where I tweeted out and I said there was going to be a new whistleblower coming out who has firsthand knowledge of, you know, the secret access programs and the alien conversation, and had a face-to-face kind of, well, I didn't say this in the tweet because that would have been too much information then, but I said someone who had firsthand knowledge of, you know, everything that was going on, and somebody who was able to give David Grush that firsthand knowledge. So that was something I tweeted out back on January 4th. Again, it received mostly positive attention, but there's always people out there who are going to give it negative attention. And I was given that information back at the end of December, and I was given that information from my military intelligence sources, and again, whether some people want to believe me or not and say that I'm arrogant for saying that I'm read into things, I'm not saying that I'm read into things. I'm saying that there are people who trust me that have decided to, make me privy to some information. And for that, I thank them profusely for trusting me enough to give me some information that they feel that I should know. And what I do with that information is that I keep my word and I hold it until the time is right. And I've done that with many things, or a few things that I still have not been able to talk about to this day that I've been told by various people. So when it comes to this particular thing, I was told back at the end of December about Jason Sands and his story that we have all come to know over this past weekend, that, again, I'm going to break down the details for you. So when I was given that information, I was told that the most I could do at that point was to put out the tweet that I put out on January 4th saying that somebody new was going to be coming out, somebody with firsthand knowledge that has spoken to David Grush and given David Grush that knowledge. I did that, and I've been waiting ever since then 3.5 months to talk about this subject. So it feels so good to be able to say the name Jason Sands. And I give him all the credit in the world for having enough bravery to do this, because this is somebody who was threatened. I can tell you right now, someone who was kind of taken off the books from, you know, his own workplace coworkers. I can tell you that as well. This is somebody who kind of went into not hiding, but went into a spot where he just wasn't talking to anybody, and he was out of the conversation for a few months, and that concerned a few people, including myself. And I was relieved, actually. I'll tell you that more than anything. I was relieved when I found out Sunday morning, because I was asleep Saturday night when this conversation took place on the Twitter spaces. So when I woke up Sunday morning around 6 a.m. and I saw this happened, I was relieved that Jason was okay, because he was on my mind, honestly. I don't know the man. I've come to know his claims and, you know, kind of some of his personality from that Twitter space, but I've never spoken to him personally. I've never met him, but I was still concerned, because I was like, what happened to this guy? He completely disappeared from the conversations that I knew he was having from the people who were telling me about his story. And then he was gone. So more than anything, I was relieved he's okay and he's ready to come out and talk. So that's, I wanted to kind of get all that out firsthand and kind of give a behind the scenes of what I had been going through, what I was told about Jason Sands, and why I'm so happy he's finally able to talk now and we can talk about this story. Because my gosh, I've been wanting to talk to you about these details for over 3 months. So it's just exciting, really exciting is probably the best way I can put it, time that we are in right now. And for everybody who said, by the way, and this is petty, and I understand that, but it's important to me that I'm able to, you know, kind of prove my own claims that I'm not somebody who's out there. And thank you to everybody who had my back on that a few months ago, who said, you know, you believed me and you know my character and you know the place I'm coming from, that I'm not just going to make something up like that, that this was going to take place. I just couldn't give the details at that time for all the obvious reasons. So thank you for everybody who had my back on that. And defending me against the people who call me a liar, who call me a grifter, who say all these mean-spirited things about me. You know, look, I'm a big boy. I can handle it. I know that's the world we live in. But it does bother me. And it does feel nice that I'm able to have that moment of, like, what do you got to say to me now? Again, I know it's petty. I know I shouldn't feel that way. But it is good to kind of have that moment of, like, see? Told you. You just had to be patient. So just wanted to kind of get that off my chest as well. But getting into everything now, we are in this moment. Jason Sands has come out. He has made himself known. And again, that happened in the most surprising way possible, I think, through that Twitter space that took place on Saturday night. And he mentions a lot of things. The meeting that took place back in the mid-90s, his story. So we're going to get into that. If you don't know his story, you're going to find out the details of that, because he mentions it, for the most part, during this conversation that took place during the Twitter spaces. But he also mentioned that, and you'll hear this too, that he's saving a lot of the details for what he said in the James Fox documentary. That was the other part that I couldn't put out there 3.5 months ago, that he is the main witness, the main whistleblower in the new documentary coming out from James Fox that he's going to have out, I think, in a couple of months. Which is why I always thought that Jason would come out in the summer after that documentary came out, because I think that's when the documentary is coming out, but I can't say that for sure. I'm just kind of reading the tea leaves on that, so I could be wrong. Maybe it's something in the fall, but that's also how that came together when it comes to James Fox and his documentary. But enough of me blabbing on. Let's get into some of these details here and what James Sands had to say. Here's one clip where he talked about his initial meeting with the alien, his first-hand encounter with a live alien. Here you go.
As for the person I met in the desert that was 3 feet away from me, to me, his skin looked the same as what an albino would have, very, very pale white. He was a little bit shorter than me. I stand about 6 foot. He was a few inches shorter, maybe 5'6", 5'7". The ears are something that really threw me off. Under that skin, it was a bluish kind of a tinge. He had earlobes, but they were conformed to his skull, so they weren't sticking out at all like ours do. and his eyes were twice the size of ours. And the corners of his eyes were probably about where our temples are. That's how big they were. And the irises were similarly large and very dark, to the point where you couldn't tell the difference between pupil or iris.
All right, so obviously some incredible stuff right there from Jason. And again, thank you to him for, you know, feeling comfortable enough to take this leap, to take this step, because this is something, this is serious, man. Like, this is stuff that, you know, guys can lose their pensions over, you know, their retirement gets ruined. You know, you're talking about the security and safety of themselves and their family, you know, moving forward. You know, they're threatened about, you know, what you can and cannot say. And this is a guy that is still in a working capacity, by the way, who is still working towards that retirement and working towards that pension to have, you know, a secure life after he's done in the private sector. So to have the courage, really true courage, to come out and say what he knows and talk about these programs and talk about this meeting, man, I give him all the credit in the world, because I'm not sure I could do that. Honestly, like, if I have some self-reflection of my own, it takes a lot of guts. So if you're hearing this, Jason, or if anybody is hearing this that is in contact with you, thank you for what you're doing. I just want to say that, number one. And hopefully I can talk to him here on the show at some point. I'm working on that as well to try to make that happen. But those details are just obviously incredible. You know, for someone to come out and say that they had that face-to-face experience with an NHI. And it's curious, too, that he says person. So I don't know if that's just because how he's relating the story, or if he's just saying, you know, they're just like us, but obviously not your your normal human, as Jason explains it there. And there is different speculation as to what kind of alien he encountered. Was you know, someone of the tall white variety? Was it someone of some type of hybrid variety? You know, we can argue those details all we want, but the fact that he gives those details are pretty incredible. And it was eerie for me, and also validating at the same time, to hear him say that, because that's exactly what I was told 3.5-4 months ago. I've had to hold that in, that this guy came face to face with an alien with pale bluish skin, or pale skin with like a bluish tinge, and, you know, all the features, the ears kind of melded into the skull and the big eyes. And this is someone who had this experience. And I'm like, the first thing I wanted to do was come on here and talk to you guys about it. But, you know, I always keep my word. If I'm told I can't mention it until the time is right, then that's what I do. And I'm really happy to be talking to you about it today, because it really is paradigm shifting stuff. And I know some people don't feel that way. I know some people say that, you know, they don't, put a lot of water in claims without, you know, hard proof or pictures or video, whatever it might be. But when you look into Jason Sands and who he is and his background in the service and in the intelligence sector of everything, I mean, this is, to me, a firsthand account that is very, that is verifiable, I guess I should say. It's something that I believe. I know I always say, you know, believe what you want, make of it what you will. This is something that I'm taking to heart, which is why I'm so excited about it. But here's what he took away as well from that meeting and the information he received from this NHI telepathically. This is what Jason had to say about all that.
From the person that I had contact with and what I thought he was doing here, he felt like he was, because when there was a telepathic part of what he was communicating, because he wasn't speaking English. And I didn't know what language it was, but I could understand him perfectly. So we were sharing mind space, and he seemed like he was here as a worker, part of the workforce that was interacting with the program. The only parts of that I got exposed to was just the fact that they were helping in the labs under certain conditions that were highly, highly managed. And you could tell they did not want to do a free-for-all exchange of a technology at all. It seemed very, very controlled, like they didn't want to give anything dangerous to us at all.
All right, so a lot to kind of, you know, unpack there, and we're going to get into some other clips that relate to what Jason was saying there. You know, first off, when it comes to, of course, telepathic communication, we've heard that many times when it comes to NHI, as far as that's how they communicate, not speaking English, but still able to understand what was being said. So I think that's pretty cool to hear. And then when you hear about how he felt he was just there as a worker, right? And you're talking about working in the labs, working alongside humans. And this lends credence to so many other stories that we've spoken about here on the show and that we've heard just in general when you talk about things like the Dulce base, where, you know, Philip Schneider came across this underground base where NHI were working with human beings. Just everything we've heard about with Area 51, Area 52, the Tonopah test range, which is actually where this is said to have taken place, this, you know, meeting in the desert, so to speak, around Nellis Air Force Base, supposedly. So just incredible stuff where you consider the repercussions of what Jason is talking about here and how it, again, lends credence to so many other, you know, stories and testimonies that we've heard about NHI and humans working side by side and working in the lab and, you know, working to on alien tech together. It's incredible. I know I keep saying that word, but I think it's the best word to use when it comes to some of these details that we're finding out from a firsthand witness in Jason Sands. And man, I would love to see him in front of Congress like we saw with David Grush. And I'm sure Jason would be all for that as well, just from what I've heard in that Twitter space he was in. Just really exciting stuff. But getting back to what he was talking about here with, you know, aliens working alongside human beings in the lab, how was that? How was that environment? Here's what he said he heard about it.
Sometimes they were in labs, sometimes they weren't. But that it was very tenuous if they were in the labs. That's all I know. In other words, they didn't want to be actually in the labs with us humans because, you know, it's just not something they wanted to be part of. Right. So I know that that's definitely something I have some inkling of, and that's about as far as I can go with it, is that they don't want to be helping us build weapon systems.
All right, so a couple of curious things. Number one, where Jason says it's as far as he can go about it because, you know, and that's the curious part to me. Is it because he's going to say more in the documentary with James Fox and wants to wait for that to come out? Or is that part classified and there are some things that he's been told that he simply still cannot talk about? And David Grush is in that same situation. And remember, this is a guy that has spoken to David Grush, that you know, conversated back and forth when it came to their own decisions on whether or not they were going to go public. And they spoke about that together. That's actually something that Jason spoke about during this Twitter space that I don't have on a clip, but that is one part that I heard where they spoke back and forth and were kind of trying to decide together, you know, I think we're going public. And David Grush says, yeah, I'm thinking about the same thing. And then he did. And now here we are, you know, over, I guess, about a year later. And we have Jason Sands going public now as well. And again, this is somebody that gave David Grush some of the info that we've heard about. But the other curious thing in there is why? What was it? What was it about working side by side with humans that would make NHI uneasy? What didn't they want to do with us or not want us to have? Jason answered that question here.
Any kind of technology that we use, and being sort of a barbaric race, I would say that just from knowing our own nature, that they probably are leery of that. They wouldn't want us to have a technology that they could, that we might be able to wield against them. But I don't think that we would do that. I'm not saying that that's what we would do, but just that, you know, that just like we would think that, you know, hey, you know, we don't want, you know, one of our enemies to have, or some person that we're not sure is our enemy or not, having some kind of technology that they could use against us, you know. It's just a security measure, because I'm not a scientist, but I know some of the power and the power generations and stuff like that, that it was pretty huge from what I heard. Because when we researched it and some of the things that they were doing with gravity and other things, just freaking awesome what they can do.
Get into that in a second, but I want to go back to what he was saying when it comes to, you know, why they wouldn't want to give us some technology. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, if you put it into human terms, because you're talking about sentient beings here who, you know, think and have emotions, supposedly, or maybe we can assume, just like humans do, right? And have a thought process and strategies and missions and things like that, then it makes perfect sense if you relate it to the human condition as to why they wouldn't want to give us some tech, right? And maybe that explains because we would put ourselves or put them in danger, one or the other or both. You know, why would they want to put us on an even playing field? And maybe that explains one of the things that are always spoken about, which is how these crafts and these beings are always seem to be attracted to our nuclear bases. And even going back to the Malmstrom Air Force Base incidents with Robert Salas back in the 60s, where they shut down the nukes, and even something as recent as back in October about the incident that I spoke about that no one has really spoken about, but that I was told about when it comes to the giant black triangle UAP flying over secret nuclear installations in Wyoming and Colorado. You know, it's this stuff has been going on for decades, and it seems that there has been this interference and or study slash interest in our nuclear capabilities. And maybe that has something to do with it. Right. And that's always something that we've kind of suspected anyway when it comes to. So it makes perfect sense when it comes to they're monitoring our capabilities and they're tempering our reach of our capabilities by not necessarily giving us everything that they have for those two reasons, to make sure we don't destroy ourselves and to make sure we don't destroy them or get on an even playing ground with them. Because I think that analogy that Jason makes is a perfect one where, you know, would we want to give, we, United States, want to give China or Russia our latest weapons tech or our latest transportation tech? You know, through space? No. I mean, that stuff, those are heavily guarded secrets. That's one of the reasons why the NHI discussion is so heavily guarded within the government sectors, because of national defense. Because they're keeping these things to themselves for U.S. weapons and tech and military contracts. So, of course, that makes sense. And maybe the NHI, the aliens, are in the same boat. They don't want us to have all the technology for those same exact reasons. So it's a really interesting thought. But I think also at the same time, they're willing to help because they also want to help us along, right? They want to see us reach a certain point where maybe we're not always going to have some type of nefarious, you know, thoughts when it comes to this. Maybe we can actually use it for good, like for things like, you know, free and clean energy, you know, God forbid, right? Sustainable energy and things of that nature. Well, one can dream that we would use this for good and put it out to the world for those reasons. But maybe I'm too idealistic. I don't know. But he also did mention one thing there at the end when it came to the technology that he's heard about and how they're able to manipulate gravity and how cool it is. He went into that a little bit more when he spoke about how their propulsion works, another really big subject that's been a talk for a long time. Here's what Jason had to say.
They likely have other forms of propulsion. Most of the ones I know of or had heard of are electromagnetic in nature or some form of it in one way, shape, or another to counteract gravity.
So it really, again, kind of verifies some of the things that we've heard, right? Electromagnetic propulsion or anti-gravity, or that, you know, electromagnetic leads to anti-gravity. Look, it just came out over the weekend, I think it was Friday, where they announced that scientists have developed some type of introduction to anti-gravity technology. If you missed that, that came out a few days ago. And if that's the case, you know, maybe some of that stuff is starting to leak out as far as what we've been able to reverse engineer from the NHI tech. So these are really exciting times. And what Jason says there really verifies some of that stuff that we heard and some of the things that we've heard over the decades from guys like Bob Lazar. I mean, I couldn't help but to wonder when I was putting this together and listening to all these clips, what a guy like Bob Lazar thinks about this. Because I'm sure he's heard what Jason has had to say. He probably heard it before it even came out, you know, Jason came out over the weekend. I don't know. I mean, I've never spoken to Bob Lazar, so I can't say yes or no. I'm just assuming one way or the other. But I really wonder what he thinks. Like, does someone like Bob Lazar, who has spoken so long about this and has spoken about, you know, the tech that he worked on at Area 51 decades ago, about the anti-gravity technology and how their propulsion works, you know, does he look at this and get angry and say, I've been trying to tell you? Or does he look at it and say, do you believe me now? You know, Like, does it make him feel good that this stuff is being talked about? I don't know. Maybe it's frustrating, but it sure does lend some type of, you know, verification to some of those claims that we've heard from him over the years. I think, I mean, that's the way I look at it anyway. One thing here that Jason also spoke about that I found really interesting was what type of agreements the U.S. government has, the military, the Pentagon, however you want to lump it all in, you know, all the above. What type of agreements do they have with non-human intelligence, with these actual beings who come to Earth? And this goes back to something that I've always been fascinated by. It was actually one of my first episodes I ever did of UAP, speaking about President Eisenhower and his meeting at Holloman Air Force Base back in 1954 with the Greys and the Nordics. And when they supposedly came to an agreement at that point about what tech can and can't be used and how they would exchange information and things like that. Well, there's always been a lot of talk about whether or not that actually happened. Here's what Jason had to say.
I also heard at one point that the Holloman thing did happen. And that, again, shows that there was some sort of, interaction between our own president at the time and them. And I would imagine there was some kind of an agreement, either verbal or written or otherwise, that has been probably enacted ever since. That there's at least evidence that I've heard that, yeah, that's exactly what's going on.
I mean, think about what that information means. Think about what Jason Sands is saying there when it comes to, that agreement took place because it's a longstanding agreement, and it's how else would you have, you know, aliens working with humans side by side out of the kindness of their own heart? I don't know. Maybe they just really like us and want to try to help us out, or there's got to be some type of longstanding agreement that would allow for something like this to happen. And according to what Jason was saying, that all kind of stems back to 1954, post Roswell and President Eisenhower. So it's, I know I keep using the word incredible, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound repetitive, but that's what it is. It's really incredible stuff that we're hearing, because this is stuff that Jason Sands spoke about over the weekend that, again, if you believe him, up to you. I personally do. If you believe him, it verifies so many different theories that we've spoken about over the years and have wondered about over the years. One question that had people kind of scratching their heads was, why now and why on Twitter Spaces? And that was something that, some of the skeptics, and there's always going to be skeptics. It doesn't matter. Okay, let me just say that too. There's always going to be someone who comes out and says, yeah, but, and they're going to come out and they're going to say this and that about, you know, why it's not true, or why we have to, you know, wonder about this and ask these different questions. And that's totally fine. We should ask questions and we should try to verify the information. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that when someone does give you the answers that you're asking about and you still come out and try to discredit them and say you don't believe them, that's the part that's frustrating to me, and that's the part that really kind of irks me, when they are giving you the answers you're looking for and you still come out and say, yeah, but, because you can have Jason Sands, and I think he actually said this at one point during the Twitter space, he could have come out with a video holding hands with the alien that he met back in the mid-90s in the desert. He could have taken a selfie with him, okay? However you would have done that in 1995 or the mid-90s, I'm not sure, but whatever, you know, secret technology they had, maybe just a normal camera, turn it around and take the picture and develop it at Walmart or Walgreens. I don't know. But he could have come out with that picture and said, here it is. This is when I met the alien. And what would people have said? Oh, that's Photoshopped. Oh, that's fake. Oh, look, you can tell I spent hours breaking this down, and by the shadows and the direction of the sun and this and that, you can tell that the alien isn't actually really there, and it's just something that was made up for the picture. There's always going to be somebody that comes out and tries to discredit you. So that's what Jason was talking about here when he says, basically, why now, and kind of the situation that he's in.
I couldn't let Courtney or Leslie Kane or anybody else run with the story, or Colt Hart or Jeremy Corbell or anybody else that would be interested in that sort of thing. I just really wasn't ready. But this is the month where all that is taken care of. I've got all my legal blocks gone through. I've gone through Congress, the whistleblower program, like I said earlier. I've gone through the ICIG. I've been through Arrow. I've done all of it. I've done everything by the numbers, just like David Grush did.
So you can hear I'm not the only one that's been waiting for this to come out. He mentioned a lot of names there. And that also kind of goes back to something that's, you know, my source, Anthony Williams, who I've had on the show before, you know, obviously intelligence analyst within the U.S. military. If you've never heard him, I've done about, I think, three or four episodes with him. And he's just absolutely fantastic in the information that, you know, he's able to give. And one thing we spoke about was, he was talking about Jason Sands, not in name, but he was talking about this story because he knew about it. And he said, be patient. We can't just sit there and say, give me the information now. There's stuff that needs to happen behind the scenes. And you hear Jason talk about it right there, the different paperwork and the legalities that he has to go through first before you can come out and start talking about these things. He's been able to do that. And now here we are. That's the real world, folks. So for everybody who comes out and says, well, show us proof. Why can't you talk about it right now? That's how the real world works. You got to go through some processes, okay? And maybe that's something that somebody should tell Stephen Greenstreet. Man, this guy, I try not to speak ill of anybody, but when you hear how Stephen Greenstreet plays or questions and responds to Jason Sands, because during the Twitter space, there was a lot of questions from a lot of different people. Shout out to one of them, The Juan. The Juan is great. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you really should. So I want to give him a shout out because he's one of the people that I really look at when it comes to what's being said about different subjects. He approaches it in kind of a similar way that I do, like, you know, here's the story, here's the details. So I think he's great. So if you want to look on a positive side, The Juan would be a positive side. If you want to look him up on social media there on Twitter, he's a great follow, gives a lot of great information. So he asked some awesome questions during this Twitter space. So that's the positive. The negative would be somebody like Stephen Greenstreet, who asked this question. The question isn't a bad question. It's the way he approaches it, in my opinion. Here is a back and forth between Stephen Greenstreet and Jason Sands when they're talking about, again, why now, you know, and why on Twitter? You know, what's the situation here?
You mentioned the blue alien or the blue entity, but you stopped yourself short from getting into too many details, saying that we would have to wait and see. Wait and see for what?
Well, it's just, I know James Fox, I go over all that in James Fox's film. I don't want to spoil it for him or you guys. And that's I'm holding back is because I know he's working real hard on it. So.
Okay, so for a movie. Okay. And then is there a reason why you decided to be a whistleblower on Twitter spaces rather than going to like the Washington Post or mainstream media?
Well, this one, well, those are all possibilities, of, you know, to do all those kinds of things. This one seemed to be a good discussion tonight, and I wanted to be part of that because it seems that there's been a few other times when my name has been mentioned. I felt bad that I couldn't participate at that time because I was still going through my DOPSR process, which is your pre-publication thing. Opportunity is always there, but you know, I'm not a glory seeker or anything like that. I've just wanted to set the story straight.
All right, so a few important things there. Number one, let me start with the end where Jason says, not a glory seeker, just trying to set the story straight, answered why, you know, he came onto Twitter Spaces, wanted to get the information out there. And so when it comes to Stephen Greenstreet and his questions, again, not bad questions, fair questions, but the way you approach those when you say, oh, where you ask Jason the question and saying, you know, why can't you elaborate more on this alien that you met? And he says, well, you know, I can only give so much information right now. I don't want to spoil what James Fox, the work that he's been doing for his documentary. And you hear the way Stephen Greenstreet says, oh, okay, great, a movie, got it. Like, that's so arrogant, and it's just so snobby to come across like that. Like, you're just trying to basically, like, in that point, And I'll read into it, and, you know, you can say what you want, but I read into it as basically saying Stephen Greenstreet at that moment said, oh, yeah, you're lying because you're just trying to capitalize off of a story, and you just want to make money off of your story. Got it. That's how he said it. Maybe I'm wrong. That's how I took it. If I'm wrong, I sincerely apologize. But the way he comes across and says, oh, okay, got it, in a movie. Yeah, you know, how would you feel, Stephen Greenstreet, if you were working on a story and somebody came out and gave all the information before you were able to publish it? That wouldn't be cool, right? This is the same situation. James Fox is working on a film covering this with Jason Sands. So don't you think it would be kind of crappy if Jason came out and gave all of the information before that can come out and before all of James Fox's hard work could pay off? It's just that stuff like that is just infuriating to me. And then when he says, well, why not, you know, the Washington Post or some type of mainstream media? I'll answer that in a more blunt way than Jason was able to, because he was trying to be nice, but I'll be very blunt about it. You come onto Twitter and talk to people instead of the mainstream media or the Washington Post, because the mainstream media and the Washington Post suck. They're just awful. That's why, because they're going to try to spin your words. They're going to try to write their own story. They're going to misquote you, and they're going to try to downgrade you instead of telling the actual story. So what Jason did was came on with everybody, with everyday people, onto his social media platform with the Twitter space and told his story the way he wanted to be told in his own words. So that way nothing can be misconstrued or intentionally misrepresented and be, you know, all muddled up through the mainstream media and the Washington Post. That's why he did it the way he did, Stephen Greenstreet. Okay. So I'm sorry. I had to get that off my chest. It really bugged me. But there was something here that Jason also mentioned that I wanted to kind of break down. This is a really good point. And where, when it comes to the amount of whistleblowers, because this has been said before about how many guys are out there that are waiting to come out. Jason kind of alludes to that. And I think this is a really important point.
We're in an era right now where there's been a lot of other people that, aside from me, that are coming forward. And they seem, all the whistleblowers seem to be of the same theme, that something is happening that needs to be looked at. And that can't be good, because if you've got, you know, what David was saying and other people have been saying, if there's 40 credible witnesses that hold clearances and are verified just as I am, that's probably the largest contingent of credible witnesses and insiders all saying the same thing. That should speak volumes to this nation, and that should speak volumes to the Congress, that doesn't just happen, because I don't even know who these other whistleblowers are. How could we all, not knowing each other, come up with the same sort of problems and concerns?
Such an important point to make there, because that kind of goes back even to, you know, some of the things I've said when it comes to, I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back, don't get me wrong, that I don't want to come across that way, but just to draw parallels to some of the things I've mentioned here on the show, where we talk about, you know, well, how do we know this is true? And when you start to connect the dots from different stories over different time periods, over different regions of the world, where someone from ancient Egypt can say this, and someone from 2018, you know, North Carolina can say this, and back and forth and vice versa, something from 150 years ago can be reported and it sounds the same as something, you know, now. It's that type of stuff that Jason's talking about there when it comes to whistleblowers, guys who are in different programs in different parts of the country and over different time periods who have never met each other but can talk about the same type of experiences. And when you have something like that, that's what really speaks volumes, and that's what really lends so much credence to some of the things, to really all the things that he's talking about and mentioning or did mention during the Twitter space conversation that took place over the weekend. And I think that's really an important point to make, and I cannot wait, because it's not going to end with Jason Sands. It's not going to end with David Grush and so many other guys who have come out to speak, like, you know, Michael Herrera, who I'm trying to get back in contact with, by the way. So I'll keep you updated on that. Obviously, he's very busy, so I'm trying to get back in touch with him, because I'm really curious to hear what someone like Michael Herrera thinks about what Jason Sands has had to say because he's been really important in this movement as well. So there's a lot of guys out there who have come out and who have yet to come out, and I can't wait to hear what everybody else has to say, and hopefully they can, you know, find that same type of courage and the right timing like Jason has had and so many others, like the names I mentioned, to come out and tell their stories so we can get all that corroboration that Jason is talking about and get it out into the public. This was really interesting, this part here. This was kind of where someone asked about, you know, what's classified or what's unclassified, some of the details when it comes to the conversation surrounding, you know, non-human intelligence. Jason talked about that, and I found this fascinating, so I wanted to play it for you.
Well, here you go. In my mind, it's very simple. I knew from day one, from being read in, that the NHIs were not classified at all. I mean, honestly, if you think about it, if there's another civilization out there and they are working with us, they're not going to care what classification guidance we use. They're going to come with their own set of laws, and they will probably likely want to be treated like an embassy wherever they're staying. And that's kind of how they, I would imagine that that's exactly how they run it. And that's what I was told, how they run it. And so that part of it is totally unclassified. Now, the classified part, yeah, that's the program. That's those are the weapon systems. Those are the technologies that we need to keep our national security alive. That will always be a classified thing. So just, you know, that's the veil. It's a very simple one in my mind. It's not really complex. It's just one or the other. You're either working on a weapon system, and part of the program deals with NHIs, which is totally unclassified. That's what I know.
Really interesting stuff. It kind of draws a good parallel between, you know, classified and unclassified, what can and can't be talked about and what should and shouldn't be talked about. And that makes perfect sense to me, what he had to say there. And I found that interesting, too, when he talks about, you know, like an alien embassy, like that's how they would want to be treated. Because, you know, I kind of start to wonder, you know, like the talks of this Galactic Federation. I mentioned that previously in an episode a while back, I think sometime last year. And I've been wanting to do an updated episode about this idea, this talk about this Galactic Federation that is supposedly out there. It's really interesting. So that kind of made me think about that, too, and how much, you know, how true are stories and claims about this Galactic Federation that is supposedly out there. So I don't know. I guess that part remains to be seen. But one part that we get a lot of questions about that Jason also spoke on, and there's a few more things here, by the way, it was really some good stuff from this Twitter Spaces conversation that I wanted to break down for you today, but we're almost toward the end here, so I'll wrap it up soon. But the nature of orbs and why orbs, what are they? Do they have intelligence inside? Are they drones? We get a lot of questions about why we see so many orbs. I've asked that question before to different people. Why so many orbs? Jason spoke about orbs right here.
This is just my opinion. From what I have heard, from what I believe are legitimate reporting, is that there's a lot of drones being flown around because of the danger of a crash. There seems to be directed energy weapons that affect the UAP. So I think if you're a smart NHI, you wouldn't have people on board anymore, just because you wouldn't want to endanger your own people. Just like we wouldn't want our own air crews to endanger themselves. So the orbs, I would say, are, they serve a multitude of different missions. There are some that are research. There are some that are interplanetary or otherwise, where they can, you know, come and they provide a conveyance from one location to another to get someplace they want to go. That may be why they're here. And that's what those orbs are about.
Really good stuff. Just plain answers, you know, not speaking in uncertain terms. I can't wait to hear what else he has to say in the James Fox documentary that, you know, is supposed to come out soon, because this is what we got on a Twitter space. I can't imagine what's in that documentary. That's going to be good stuff. But he said something there that really caught my attention about, the threat of direct energy weapons. That's really interesting to me because that's something that we've heard from people like, you know, Eric Hecker, who I've had on the show before. We've talked about direct energy weapons from Michael Herrera. I mentioned him a little while ago, where he's spoken specifically about the capabilities and the use of directed energy weapons to take down alien craft in order to retrieve them to use for reverse engineering their technology. That was really, really striking to hear him actually mention that. And to hear that there is, not that I doubted those guys before with Eric Hecker and Michael Herrera, but to hear, you know, him talk about that when it comes to that firsthand knowledge, to have that corroboration from someone like a Jason Sands was really striking to me. So, and kind of scary too. Like, again, the question that I spoke about with Michael Herrera when we first spoke about that theory is, what about retaliation? You know, are they ever going to feel the need or the urge to retaliate if we're shooting down their craft? It's wild stuff. But he did mention it there. And so that would be a reason why you see the orbs. Most are drones, which makes perfect sense. And, you know, you do have that back and forth, like you said, you know, from planet to planet, galactic. Crazy stuff, man. It really is a lot to take in. But speaking of the craft, he got a question that I thought was really important. And actually, I mentioned earlier the Juan to follow him on Twitter because he does a great job. And this is actually the question he asked about the type of craft recovered and the locations that Jason knows of. Really, really important question and fascinating answer here.
So craft, Texas, Central America, South America, Vietnam, and several other countries are retrieval site areas. The types of craft were, it's like we discussed earlier, just, you know, they're, some of them were just drones with no biologics. Some did have biologics in them.
So some have, some don't. We've heard David Grush tell similar stories as well about biologics being recovered. Sometimes they're drones, you heard Jason say there. And to hear those locations, to actually hear that in black and white, where he just says, yeah, you know, Central America, South America, Vietnam, Texas, other locations, many countries around the world where these craft have been recovered. It really changes the conversation to have someone like this come out and give just flat out details like this. It really is exciting. And I can't wait to see what else comes from it. But as you get toward the end here from everything that's, you know, I got from this Twitter space, Jason mentioned a couple of things that I thought really, you know, merited some attention here. This is where he talked about, what do all whistleblowers want? What do they have in common? Here's what he said about that.
They want to get the truth out there. That's really what this is, has always been about. So it's one thing to run the program for national security reasons. It's quite another to keep from all of mankind that we're not alone. And that's the big beef, I think, the big dividing line is that, do these two have to be forever intermingled and never talked about?
That was such a profound point at the end from Jason Sands. You know, why do these two things have to be intermingled? And that's always been the question. Why isn't the truth being told about the existence of other life on other worlds, non-human intelligence, life other than humans, however you want to put it? Why isn't that truth being told? And it's really a great distinction to make in how he said it there, which is, you can have your secrecy surrounding, you know, defense contracts and technology and national security. That's fine. But why does that have to go hand in hand, be in, you know, intermingled, as he put it, with the fact, and David Grush has brought this up too, with the fact that this basic disclosure, as David Grush has put it, actually putting out the fact that there is other life in the universe and that they are visiting Earth. That's something that should be public knowledge, that should be publicly disclosed. Why does that have to go hand in hand with the national security standpoint of things? And maybe there's something to the story that we're not seeing. You know, there's always that question. Why is that still being kept a secret? Does that go hand in hand with national security? And we're just not aware of the reason. You know, maybe Jason wasn't read in on that. Maybe that is the case. Does it go back to religion? You know, we've spoken about that before. Are they concerned about the impact it would have on faith and different religious aspects? Is that a concern? Is that something that plays into this? You know, would it be have something to do just with, in general, the everyday discussion? What, are they afraid of panic from people? You know, when you have this public disclosure of life on other planets, that NHI have been visiting Earth for decades and possibly longer, centuries, you know? And so I think that's a question that's going to remain to be asked, which is, why do the two have to be intermingled? Are we ever going to be able to separate national security and things like that from just the basic disclosure of, yes, aliens exist? I guess that is a question that remains to be seen. But we'll finish off here from Jason's statements over the weekend in his big reveal with what he had to say at the very end of that 5-hour Twitter space that he did, where he answered all the questions that were asked. Here's how he ended that. And I think it's a perfect way to end this discussion.
I'm just a normal guy that seems to have, you know, been through some very strange stuff. And honestly, that's who I feel I am. I can't be more genuine than I already am. And if that's not good enough, I just don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think that's the perfect message to send as he wrapped it up. And I know it's not the last we're going to hear from Jason, obviously, since it's going to be the James Fox documentary, but I know he'll be doing more interviews down the line as well. And hopefully one of them will be right here with me. I'll keep working on that. But just some other things to wrap up that, you know, clips I didn't play that I found interesting. He said that he's whistleblowing because he doesn't like some of the nefarious things going on in the background with these programs. That was another thing he had mentioned. You know, I put out the other part there where he said just trying to get the truth out there, you know, wanted to set the record straight. But another thing he mentioned during the Twitter space was he had been hearing about some of the nefarious things going on in the background. And I wonder how much of that applies to, again, I bring up the name Michael Herrera and his story that he told when it came to how, you know, they're using this technology to kind of build these black site programs by taking people to, you know, who have psychic ability, inclinations, how, you know, Michael Herrera put it in that story where we spoke some months ago, to try to contact, you know, NHI to bring them down to Earth. Like, there's, I know that's all that stuff sounds crazy, but is it that far-fetched considering everything else that we've spoken about here today? So it was interesting to hear Jason kind of mention how he doesn't like some of the nefarious things he's hearing about going on in the background. I wonder, just personally, if that's what he's referring to. He also mentioned that he wants to get with Congress, like David Grush did. And he said he would love to be able to walk them into facilities and show proof of these programs that he's talking about. Imagine that. Now, for right now, from what I've noticed, he's exclusively on Twitter at this point. So if you'd like to follow him, I'll get his Twitter handle for you as well. If you want to give him a follow and try to keep up with everything that's going on with Jason Sands. So I'll grab that for you, too. But also, he showed his credentials, and that's something that you would see on his Twitter. He actually put up his credentials when someone kind of called about and said, hey, can you at least try to verify who you are? And he did, and a lot of people were impressed by that. He kind of showed, you know, what programs he's been in and on the government papers that he was able to post, blocking out the personal identifiable information like his social security number and things like that. He said he believes that Roswell happened and that's when the culture of secrecy and the secret program started. I found that really, really fascinating and important for him to say that from everything, his knowledge that the Roswell incident did in fact take place. And that was kind of the nexus of this entire secret culture that we've been going through now for, you know, over 70 years, pretty much. So that was really interesting to hear him say that. And of course, leading up to the 1954 meeting with Eisenhower between the Greys and the Nordics, he mentioned that as well, that he believes that did take place. He's frustrated by the lack of congressional oversight of, you know, things in the black budget that they don't know about. I know that's what a lot of people in Congress, like, you know, Tim Burchett and people like that have spoken about, like not having access to, you know, and not having congressional oversight over the budget. Like, where is this money going? So he's frustrated by that as well, which I think was also another motivating factor for him. He did also mention something that I found interesting because this is another theory that he says is true a theory that a lot of people always put out, and that is the involvement of the Department of Energy. And he says they are, in fact, involved with the security behind this whole thing, stemming back to the Trinity test with Oppenheimer, you know, how the Atomic Energy Council became the Department of Energy and how they are involved with the security surrounding these special access programs and these secret programs. So pretty interesting there to hear that type of verification from Jason. Something he did, again, verify that I was told back at the end of December, he does know David Grush. He speaks to him on a personal basis, and they did have that conversation together to say, hey, you know, we're both thinking about doing this, and they kind of bounced ideas off of each other. And he said another big motivating factor for him to come out was really just to help inform the public to what's really happening behind the scenes. He also mentioned the Air Force is more closed-lipped than the Navy, and that's not by accident. And that's a question that I've asked with Anthony Williams, my source, when he's been on the show, and he's mentioned specifically, you know, from the chair that he sits in as a military intelligence analyst in Anthony Williams, where he says there's something going on with the Air Force that the brass up there, you know, they are intentionally not speaking about these things, but the Navy is. So that's a striking difference there as well. And there was one more thing about how many craft are being taken down. I'm sorry, I know this is running long, but there was just so much important information to get to that I wanted to highlight. But he mentioned that from what he's been told, that there's about 1 to 2 craft taken down every 3 to 5 years. Now, that's actually on the low end from some of the other sources that have spoken about these things. But just to be able to come out and say that, yeah, you know, these things are crashing and they're being taken down, and he mentioned the direct energy weapons, like, this stuff is actually happening? You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to wrap your head around it, but according to Jason and others that we've heard from, these things are being taken down, which, again, would explain the drones, the orbs that we see, because they don't want to be in danger of being taken down. Just incredible to really think about the you know, repercussions of something like that. So what's next after all this? Who will he speak to? You know, will we hear anything else before the movie comes out with James Fox? I've reached out to both of them, by the way. I haven't heard anything back. I've reached out to James Fox. I've reached out to Jason. I haven't heard anything back on that end. I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes. So if something happens, I'll obviously let you know. But that's about it for now. There's probably, I could probably do this for another hour, but I won't do that. There's just so much to go over, and there will be much more to discuss as time goes forward. And I will be speaking, I can tell you this, I will be speaking with my source, Anthony Williams, who was, you know, came on here and talked about this story with me to begin with before Jason went public, without mentioning his name, of course, when we spoke about that, or a lot of the, you know, inner details of it. But he is going to come back on with me and discuss this now that it's out in the open. So I'm sure he'll be able to give more details on it that he wasn't able to give before. Two quick shout outs that I want to give that made this episode possible. Logan, if you find him on social media, it's at FullStackLogan. He was able to put out the entire transcript and 5-hour Twitter space on YouTube, and he put out the transcript on Twitter as well in a Google Doc. So if you want to access everything, I mean literally everything, you can find it at FullStackLogan on Twitter, and he goes by the name Logan. Awesome job by him. And honestly, without his putting out the video on YouTube, this episode would not have been possible, because that's where I was able to get the sound from the Twitter space. So thank you to him for putting that out for everybody, not just, you know, he didn't do it for me as a favor. He did it for everybody as a favor to access this information. So at FullStackLogan, thank you to him. And if you want to, I mentioned Jason Sands as well. So if you want to follow him, it's at JasonSA321-35987. So that's Jason SA321-35987. That's Jason Sands' Twitter handle. If you want to keep tabs on him on social media, on Twitter. But that's going to do it for now. I got nothing left in this very moment. And there's obviously going to be much more to come. And I can't wait to cover it all with you right here on UAP and UAP Weekly. Sorry to take up so much of your time, but I wanted to give you all the details I possibly could. If you like, you can follow the show on Twitter at UAPodcast850. I'm obviously keeping up on all of this, so if you'd like to keep up with me there, it's at UAPodcast850 on all social media, not just Twitter. You can find me there. And email, if you'd like to do that, it's sdineruap, that's sdineruap @gmail.com if you want to get in contact with me directly. And of course, continue to download and subscribe to the show. You can find UAP wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple and Spotify and all those fine establishments. You can find UAP. Subscribe so you don't miss anything. And a rate, if you'd like to give a rate on the show as well. That would be cool, and hopefully it's a good one. So you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts. On that note, thank you all again so much for everything and for taking the time to go through this with me here today. Really, this momentous occasion and the revelations that we've experienced within the past 48 hours. So much more to come, and I'll keep you up to date as best I can on everything. More UAP episode 80 coming out this week. Part 2 of Joseph McMonagall and that series there for remote viewing. Until then, be well. I'll talk to you again soon. It's Stephen Diener, Unidentified Alien Podcast. Be well.